The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Did you know that in 1834, Ireland's railway story began with the opening of the Dublin and Kingstown Railway? We talked about that on the programme before. It was the country's first passenger line. But what started as a short coastal journey soon exploded into railway mania, with an expansive network that stitched towns, cities and rural communities together. I'm joined in studio now by historian, broadcaster and podcaster Turtle Bunbury to talk about this a little bit more. Railway mania.
Railway mania, yeah, that was all the rage across Britain and Ireland in the late 1830s, moving into the 1840s. And that's when most of the lines that we use to this day were laid down. An extraordinary project. And I've just been thinking about it recently because I was along one of the lines and I was going through an embankment and I was thinking about the navvies and the labourers, tens of thousands of fellas who were out there building these things with their hands, with picks and shovels, blasting rocks and cutting, you know, the embankments like that. I saw unbelievable energy required.
Now, what was the imperative? Because, you know, people didn't commute to the cities to work. So this was more about leisure than anything else.
Well, a lot of it would, it became about leisure. I don't know if that was entirely the intention, but from the get-go, you mentioned the Dublin and Kingstown Railway, and when that railway came out from Weston Row beside Trinity College going out to Dunleary, that immediately established Dunleary as the first seaside resort in Ireland. And then we, as that line is extended down to Sandy Cove, Dalkey, Killiney, all of those places become seaside resorts. You see the same in Bray. When Bray Station opens in 1854, it immediately becomes the main sort of Victorian seaside resort in Ireland, on the east coast of Ireland. And then it's replicated up in the north as well. Port Rush in County Antrim, which has got not one but two beaches and, you know, pretty close proximity to the Giant's Causeway. The moment the railway arrives there in 1855, Port Rush becomes the main sort of seaside resort in Ulster.
Now, talk to me about Balfour and his role in the development of Irish Rail.
Arthur Balfour, right, so he's a fascinating character, right? In terms of the railways, if you think, by the time he is part of a cabinet with Lord Salisbury, it's a Conservative government that comes into power in 1886. By that time, there's about 3,000 miles of tracks have been laid across Ireland. And most of the, you know, substantial towns and cities are all connected to the railway line. Salisbury comes in, and one of the first things he does is he appoints his nephew, Arthur Balfour, to be the Chief Secretary of Ireland. And this is a lucrative job. Now, Salisbury, Robert Salisbury, Bob to his friends, has just made his nephew, Arthur, given him a lucrative job, which is the origin of the expression, Bob's your uncle.
Okay.
So Arthur Balfour, who is the nephew, is not a bad chief secretary at all. He's not great if you're a nationalist. He's really champions coercive policies. He's known as Bloody Balfour, and he's not great on that front. But on the positive side, he develops what's called the Congested Districts Board. And what's that's going to do is to boost the economy of Ireland in the remote corners of the West and the Northwest and so on. And it's it's a massive enterprise. His brother, I think, hit the nail on the head when he said, what we're going to do is we're going to kill Home Rule with kindness.
We are going to be so brilliant that they'll want to stick with us rather than run themselves.
Absolutely. You know, because Britain, obviously, this government is running Ireland at the time. They thought we can nice the Irish into submission if we, you know, invest heavily in rural industry and crafts and fishing and above all into railways.
So we had railways in every corner of the country as a result.
Yeah. I mean, basically, it looks like about 16,000 people were put to work. 16,000 labourers and navvies are put to work building a dozen new lines that are going to go out into Donegal, into Kerry, into Galway, into Mayo, all those places. Unbelievable works. I mean, you'll see it. I mean, listeners will know maybe the viaduct that runs across the estuary at Ballydehob that brings the Skibbereen to Skull Railway into West Cork. There's another great viaduct in Newport in County Mayo that brings the Westport line out to Achill Island. Another that carried the Connemara line across the Corrib from Galway City to connect into Galway City.
So huge engineering challenges.
Huge, massive engineering challenges, but the difference was immense. Like that Connemara line I mentioned, okay, beforehand, if you were doing that journey from Clifton to Galway, that was like 50 miles, it took 9 hours in a Bianconi coach, you know, with the horses.
Yeah.
but now it's cut to 2.5 hours. So wow. Absolutely, you know, complete change on that front. And that's why you end up with, the map. We talked about that amazing map showing you all these railways.
As I say, it's like veins running through every part of the body of Ireland,
yeah.
Delivering people by rail. Now, was it doomed from the very start in terms of population numbers? And we know we had massive emigration over the years, so that inevitably some of these far-flung lines were never going to be commercially viable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably true from the outset, from nearly all of them. Very sadly, there were a lot of positives. Okay, so I don't want to knock the positives because they are there. Maybe we'll come back to them. But in terms of the negatives, yes, it was suddenly this train offered an opportunity to literally get on board the train and you could shoot off and head off. And in fact, that had been since the beginning when Cove was connected, Queenstown, Cove and Cork was connected to the railway back in 1850, they were like stunned because the figures show that something like 200,000 people travelled on the line in the first year. But so many of them were emigrants. Yeah, which is why Cove becomes the
town. Now, the positives,
town
I mean, getting, for example, fish from the west of Ireland to the Dublin market.
That's it. I mean, unbelievable. So, right, if you're a fisherman from Kerry, Clare, Galway, any of those places, you could put your catch on the morning train and it would get to Dublin and then go by boat and rail to London and it would be on sale in Billingsgate Market the next day. So, you know, that's an amazing thing. The women of West Clare were selling eggs and butter, putting that on the train, and they were making money out of it, and they were using that money for a new craze that caught on then, which was for concertinas, squeezy boxes, which in turn obviously helped the Banner County with its trad music scene. Amazing.
So this is like a success story. We're going to move people very quickly and easily in jig time on rail. But then Henry Ford and his pals had something to say about all of this.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's funny because the train sort of put an end to the canal and the car, the horseless carriage, then comes in and puts an end to the train, or certainly mainstream use of the train, yeah.
Now, the other thing that happened is we had been left with the relics of many English dignitaries as names for our stations. That all changed.
That did. I mean, Balfour's plan to kill Home Rule with kindness didn't quite pan out. And I wonder what he'd make of it, because in 1966, 15 of our railway stations were, of course, renamed after the 16 men executed in the Easter Rising. That's why we have Houston and Connolly and Pierce and Kent and Plunkett and so on. Roger Casement, always different. He gets a Tralee station and an aerodrome, of course. Sean Houston's interesting because he actually worked as a railway clerk for the Great Southern and Western Railway. So there's a nice little link there as well.
I suppose, harking back to history, if we just play a little bit of this.
You may talk of Columbus sailing across the Atlantic he'll see, but he never tried to go railing from Menace as far as Kilkee. You run for the train in the morning, the excursion train starting at 8. You're there when the clock gives the warning, but there for an hour you will wait. And as you're waiting in the train, you'll hear the guard sing this refrain. Are you right there, Michael? Are you right? Do you think that we'll be home before the night? Aye, you've been so long and starting that you couldn't say for certain, still you might. Now, Michael, so you might.
Well, that's the famous Percy French ballad, Are You Right There, Michael? Are You Right? And that refers to a railway.
That refers to the West Clare Railway. Now, Percy French, he wrote that in 1902, and it was a smash hit song of the year and still famous, you know, all this time later. And it was about a trip he took on the West Clare Railway where it took forever to get anywhere. And it made that railway company a national joke to such an extent that they sued Percy French for libel. Percy French turns up at the court case late, about half an hour late. The judge says, well, why are you late? He says, I'm sorry, I travelled by the West Clare Railway.
Laughter in court.
Case dismissed.
Case dismissed. Yeah. It's interesting. Are we about to embark on a new era of rail, do you think? I mean, we'll have Metrolink serving Dublin City, extensions of DART and so on. Is it likely that we'll see another golden age of rail?
I really do think so. And I think, you know, certainly with these, you know, battery electric hybrids coming on stream, I think more and more places are going to get connected over the next 20, 30 years. And I think it's, you know, that's very, very exciting.
Best way to travel. Turtle Bunbury, historian, broadcaster and podcaster, thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.